Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
The Bears reportedly, or presumably, they flew over two barbers. There were two people cutting Bears players' hair at the English countryside manor.
Now we got a problem.
Yes, because what's the old rule?
I know it's not supposed to be a good situation when you have two, because it means you don't have one, as the old saying, you know.
I don't know. There's a rule?
If you go into a barber shop and there are two barbers,
yeah,
you have one guy who has a nice haircut and then the other guy looks okay but not great. Which guy do you go to? You always go to the guy with the worst haircut because the other guy gave it to him. Look at
maybe,
me. I got
maybe
a bowl
starters.
Cut. I got a bowl
maybe
cut.
Starters go to the best.
Okay.
And then subs.
And they got another guy in with some shears.
Can I just a little off the top? Yeah. Right now.
My bad, brother. I skipped you.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir.
Nate Davis gets a bowl.
Nate Davis does not get a haircut. You can get a crew cut. That's it.
Just give Nate, a lot of credit here. He's been a pro's pro.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Okay, what are we doing today?
Yeah, I say, give me something that says I get up every morning at 5:30.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Double barber formation in London. Very impressive.
Good morning, Mully. Happy Tuesday. Yes, no context required for that open.
I can't wait to talk to Coach Wannstedt and ask him about his flight to Ireland back in the day that included one of the lavatories on the bathroom leaking blue fluid down the stairs airplane.
We don't need to relive that, do we?
Well, I just think we ought to get into it since they're apparently styling these days.
Yeah, Dave would probably bring his personal groomer now if he were to take a trip abroad. he's pretty well manicured.
Well, I don't think it's anything like Flusy with that shaved up.
I don't know. It's pretty close. That would be a pretty good debate. We'll ask him about that.
Yeah.
So how are you doing this morning? We had a lot of stuff last night, a lot of baseball, and Monday Night Football, a lot of stuff to talk about.
Love seeing the Jets lose.
Yeah, I think a lot of people enjoyed that.
Something bad had to happen to New York. I know the Bills are from New York. Actually, the Bills are from New York and the Jets are from New Jersey.
Can you imagine how obnoxious New Yorkers would have been this morning had the Mets, the Yankees, and the Jets all won in the same day?
It's almost too much.
Almost too much. And
I'm wrapping my mind around
Aaron Rodgers made sure that wasn't going to happen.
The Mets and the Yankees. I want the Mets. I don't think I want the Mets and the Yankees.
You want the Mets now?
I want the Mets.
But not the Yankees?
Not the Yankees.
See, I think it's just the opposite.
Well,
for me. I want Yankees-Dodgers.
Well, get into this. I know you want the best teams money can buy. And how about Juan Soto? He's a free agent.
I want Yankees-Dodgers because it's a relic of the past. Juan Soto, Giancarlo Stanton's the one whose home run you'll remember most, 439 feet. He got all of that one, as they say.
So you want like an all New York series. You just want it to be one from like the 1940s.
I don't want the Brooklyn Dodgers. I want the LA Dodgers.
Oh, okay.
I want shades of Reggie Jackson and Bob Welch. I want shades of Yankees, Dodgers in that era of us people of a certain age remember how that was, great October drama. And this year could be the same.
What are the Dodgers dodging in LA? Right? I mean they're the trolley Dodgers when they were in Brooklyn. What are they in LA? It's weird. It's like the Utah Jazz.
I never really thought about the nicknames if they're applicable or not.
The Minneapolis Lakers.
Yeah.
Becoming the Los
Angeles
Utah
Jazz
Lakers?
Doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Shouldn't it be like more like the Los Angeles Pacific Oceaners?
Perhaps.
There are no real lakes, are there, in L.A.?
No, all not right. really.
Strange world.
Strange world.
Yeah.
Carlos Rodon was not
he
strange
wasn't good.
Last night.
No.
He was good.
He's no good.
He was good last
He's
night.
He's turned on the home team, buddy. I saw two people yesterday in the Jewel that were wearing White Sox hats, and I just stopped and I said, God, you got a lot of guts. Congratulations.
Did you say that to them?
I did.
Yeah.
I just couldn't believe that they were out wearing White Sox hats, sitting on a bench at the Jewel.
Well, a lot of people wear them for fashion accents, like DJ Moore. Yeah. They go that route because they do go with everything. They do. They don't spoil an outfit. They look good.
I don't know, man. The way they played this year, it's tough.
Carlos Rodon for the Yankees, Michael Kopech on the Dodgers. You think about how Dylan Cease got eliminated on the Padres. All three of those guys were on the same pitching staff at one point. And it's fun to see these ex-Sox or ex-Chicago players play roles in the biggest stage of baseball. Anthony Rizzo came back last night. He's activated on the Yankees.
How's he doing?
He got a hit. He got a hit. He batted lower in the lineup.
Did he scream, "Respect me"?
I don't think he did that. Jeez.
Just curious.
I'll stop talking baseball.
No. I'm just curious. What's wrong with talking about Riz?
Yeah. He's a big part of that lineup. They can get Aaron Judge going, maybe.
They got Giancarlo Stanton going,
mm-hmm.
and they got Soto going. That's pretty big part.
Pretty
of
deep
lineup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty deep lineup, and I think power. The Guardians are going to have their hands full. I think it'll be 5 or 6 games, but I think the Yankees wind up playing in the World Series, and New Yorkers will say it's about time you're back. And the Mets, I don't have. They made a series of it. That you don't want to. You can't never rule them out. Sean Manaea again.
Sean Manaea,
very
is
good
from the region. They said on the air that he was from Valparaiso. He's not from Valparaiso, is he?
He's kind of in that area, Porter County. He went to Andrean.
He's an Indiana boy.
He began his high school career at South Central in tiny Union Mills. People in that area know where I'm talking about, but you probably don't. It was a small school. Then he went to a baseball powerhouse in Northwest Indiana. And he's got family still in the region.
Right.
So he's very much a local guy, and he's been very good for the Mets. Well-traveled as a major leaguer. He's got that lefty thing going.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to pitch for a very long time.
They said on the broadcast that the experience of watching Chris Sale this year led him to kind of lower his arm.
The arm angle.
It's pretty interesting.
It is pretty interesting. That's a good guy to emulate.
Well, it works.
It works. And
yeah.
Also, Chris Sale had a resurgent year and mm-hmm. He's probably going to be the Cy Young Award winner in the National League. Yeah, and Sean Manaea looks, I don't want to say unhittable, but he looks dominant at times when he is throwing from that arm angle, and had a very good outing yesterday against the best lineup. Dodgers or Yankees, but which lineup is more lethal? That's a good debate. I hope we can find out in the World Series. But Sean Manaea, he came ready to go, and the Mets steal one in L.A. Now it becomes interesting. Now you can count on nothing.
Yeah, I spent some time watching the first game because there was nothing else on. I spent less time on the second game because there was so much on. I watched some of the football game. I watched far too much of the Bulls preseason game in Milwaukee, especially when you consider that Josh Giddey was the only starter that played. They didn't have anybody else. And they didn't have two of their top three, I'll say, reserves. So they were without six of their better players, and they played pretty well.
They were very respectable.
Yeah.
And they were competitive. And
they were.
The Bucks did not take the night off. They played their starters, including Giannis. So you had Matas Buzelis dunking on Giannis.
He at one point dunked on Giannis.
That was pretty impressive.
That was fun.
And he is fearless. You like that. Now, you backtrack to Saturday night, and you think it was 1 of 9. He's going to have ups. He's going to have downs. The one thing that won't waver is his confidence.
Teenager. He's a 19-year-old rookie.
19-year-old rookie.
It's pretty amazing.
Welcome to the NBA moment. Here's Giannis. Yeah. Go guard him.
Go get him.
I love what he said, though. Is like, well, when they're on the court, it's 0-0, and you know everything is equal.
Giannis did not like the fact that when he went to the basket himself, they actually tried to defend him. He at one point got called for a technical foul because he shoved Josh Giddey because Giddey tried to block his shot. I mean, what? Hey, it's a preseason game. Let me put on a show.
Giannis was out for a little workout.
Yeah.
The Bulls were out to prove something.
That's right.
Those Bulls were still trying to
play,
establish who they are and what they can do to get playing together at the NBA level in Bezelis's case.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Giddey, he was the one starter that actually didn't sit and played. The other four starters, projected starters, sat out.
Right.
I understand that. And the rest of the team, Julian Phillips played again, but he left with a rib injury.
Yes.
That's a little bit of a setback for somebody who was making some progress.
And the word is that Lonzo Ball will play on Wednesday. That'll be his first game since 2022.
Yes.
NBA game.
That's almost 3 years. Remarkable comeback. What he has been through and the fact that he's on an NBA floor again, given the scope of his injury, the nature of his surgery, and what he's playing with in that knee, it's going to be a moment when he steps on the court.
Did you wonder if they played Giddey because they're probably not going to play him when Lonzo Ball is out there, did they figure he just missed so much time since the Olympics?
Yeah, I think Billy Donovan's explanation was pretty good that, you know, he did miss a lot of time, so his conditioning might not be where the others are.
Okay.
And he wanted to get him more acclimated, maybe to playing with this group as well. But I think he'll probably play. Lonzo Ball, we're talking about him getting back to the court. That's a victory in itself.
Mm.
But 8 to 10 minutes is probably as much as he'll play, right?
Yes.
He's not going to be logging heavy minutes.
I wouldn't believe he would, but
no.
But it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's kind of I know it's a strange thing to say, maybe the fascination of the abomination, but I think it's a must watch. I know that sounds crazy about an NBA
preseason. I don't disagree with that.
But I'm very curious.
I don't disagree with that. There's been few Bulls that have been talked about more and we've seen less of in the last 3 years than Lonzo Ball.
Mm-hmm.
His absence has been used much as an excuse early on, and now kind of a very awkward thing to discuss in terms of when you hear the Bulls talk about it, because they want to be respectful for all that he's done and how far he's come. But I think everybody understands why they can't really be in a position to count on him.
Yeah, I also think that the fact that the Timberwolves, the new look Timberwolves, are coming in makes it slightly interesting just from an NBA standpoint. That should be interesting to just see.
You're wondering who Dante DiVincenzo is going to insult?
Yeah, he went. Who did he go after?
Rick Brunson.
Oh, okay.
Rick Brunson
and Tibbs
had to be.
Too. Okay.
And Tom Thibodeau. They said it was good natured and amongst brothers, and Jalen was even had an arm around him as he was yelling at his dad, which is fun. All in the family.
Yeah.
DiVincenzo was a guy that stood up in Jalen Brunson's wedding, so you figure we'll work it out. But it is interesting, and he's an intense player. Good player. Mm. But, yeah, it is the new-look Timberwolves.
Villanova.
Villanova family. Yeah, a little feud in the family.
That's right.
But Lonzo Ball being on the court will be...
Jay Wright went out and got a new suit in honor of it.
Tomorrow's must-watch. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
Must-watch for Lonzo Ball.
It's just good to see. It'll be fun.
The Bulls shot 54 threes?
Yeah. They were throwing
that
up threes.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
54 three-pointers?
They were throwing up a lot of threes.
When did you pivot, by the way, on Ball? The other day you said you were like yawning about Ball. I was all giddey about it, pun intended.
I didn't know if he was going to come back this preseason. Did I pivot?
Yeah. Well, you just said it's must-watch TV.
Okay. I agree
with you, by the way.
I don't think I'm pivoting. I don't believe that he's going to be a factor in
okay.
the season.
That's different. I agree with you, but I want to be very careful here
because I respect how far he has come. I think he's going to be a largely irrelevant point during the season. I don't think he's going to contribute.
That's fair. Seeing
him come back and step on the court, that's a moment.
I'm very curious to see what he looks like. It's been so long, and it's just hard to even remember.
What do you make of the videos you've seen? What do you make of the videos?
I don't make a lot. I mean, are you talking about the stuff from practice, the little bits and pieces?
Yeah.
That's different to me than all of the kind of build-up videos.
The Instagram dunks.
Yeah.
Those kind of things.
That doesn't do much for me.
The controlled environment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm I can't help but be curious. I am I'm very much interested in to see how he looks and how far away he is from being a contributing factor. Because he was awful good when he was here.
Bulls have some depth.
When he was here. He's been out for 2.5 years, so it's hard to...
There's going
to
be
the
some...
The Bulls look good.
How about...
Yes.
Duarte.
Yeah, he was
We
okay.
didn't even mention him. We were talking about guys in the rotation. I think I listed nine guys before even getting to Duarte and Javon Carter.
I don't think he's part of it.
I don't think he's making it.
No.
The guy in the trade for DeMar DeRozan's not making the team? Brandon Fryer just cut him?
G League. Talen Horton Tucker has been playing better than
good.
Him.
He looks good. I mean, he actually plays hard, and he's a tank of a man. It's pretty interesting.
Chicago's very own.
He looks like an NBA player.
Bulls have seven guys that went to high school in the state of Illinois.
That's interesting because they used to never want guys like
that. No, Eddie Curry coming was a big deal. He's going to play in his hometown.
Yeah.
All the distractions. Did
you guys see the thread of Lonzo Ball? They said the last time Lonzo Ball played, they say like Carmelo Anthony was still in the league. Wow. Halliburton was on the Kings. The Brooklyn Nets had like Kevin Durant and James Harden. It's been that long.
Hoiberg was coach, wasn't he? I mean, geez, seems like a long time ago. It seems like a long time ago.
It's not quite that long ago.
Okay, maybe not. Seems like it. That was like 2022.
Luol Deng was in the league still, probably. Yeah.
Luol Deng.
A texter says, I thought the Bulls were trying to be awful. I don't think they look like they're trying to be awful.
I don't think they are.
I think they're trying to run the floor, and they've got a lot of young guys, and they're running the floor. I don't know. What happens when you get into real NBA games and you don't have NBA players?
They can't stop anybody.
Yeah. But
the Bulls are going to have a lot of games in the 120s, I think.
They didn't play any of their guys, and they ran the floor, and they knocked down threes yesterday. It was kind of fun to watch.
They took a lot of threes.
They did take a lot of threes, but a lot of threes.
Yeah.
They hit some threes, man. It was when they were up like 78 to 70. One or something. They were up by 10 points, I think, 74-64 at one point. They were trailing early, and then they took the lead, and I was like, wow, I cannot believe they're in this game. But they were they had a sequence where they hit about four or five of them.
I love Stacey King after the Bazelis dunk on Giannis. Meet me at the rim and don't be late.
Yeah. He was happy for him.
Stacey's
it was
great.
A big deal for him.
Yeah, Stacey's great. It's exciting, actually. You can get into you watch a game like that, and you see some things, and you know it doesn't mean anything. You know they're not playing with their starters, but you see some of the young guys contribute, and yeah, I think it could be a little fun.
That was good. It was all right, and I watched.
They made 17 of 54 threes.
Yeah. Okay.
31%.
David, that's pretty good.
Okay.
For them, it's not bad.
I suppose for them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm telling you, there was a sequence where they hit some threes.
We know Bazelis isn't shy. He'll try to dunk on Giannis. He took 9 3-pointers after a 1 of 9 showing on Saturday night. He is not shy.
No.
And I think that will serve him well. Is he going to be part of the rotation?
That's a good question. And he told Billy that he'd happily go to the G League if that's what they want to do with him. He's planning a professional career.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's going to be in the NBA for a long time. They said last night on the broadcast, I think Stacey said again, that the Bulls were so delighted to get him because they thought he could go first. And he ended up falling to them at 11, right?
You're going
to
hear that a lot because that's the Bulls' viewpoint
but
of
it. But it's also the way the league was. It wasn't a great draft. There was a lot of confusion about who was the best player, et cetera.
There are probably 5 to 7 guys who fall in the same category.
Yes, no
who
doubt.
Could have justified being number one overall. The teams that took them will think, well, they almost went first overall. Modest Bozelis has an opportunity, if he continues to play this fearlessly, to get in the rotation and stay there.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to start. There will be injuries. There will be attrition. There could be a trade. There likely will be a trade.
There are likely to be a couple of trades.
He'll take maybe a different role at some point throughout
the season.
A couple
of the guys that didn't play last night probably not going to be with the team by the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair to surmise. But at least they got depth. At least they got a lot of bodies out there. So if they can hang on to some of the right players,
they
maybe they won't fall apart when that does happen.
Yeah, I think it. They'll be interesting early on. We'll see how long that lasts. It'll be worth the watch.
But it's good stuff. It's good to see some. It's good to see like all of our sports represented. Right. It's fun that everything is kind of ongoing at this time of year.
Confluence of events and sports all at once.
And the Bears have their bye this week, and everybody is saying nice things about them while also remembering who they're playing and who they're beating. But it's good to hear a lot of the national voices saying nice things about them.
They are getting a lot of warranted national attention because Caleb Williams has turned the corner in the eyes of many. It was easy to criticize in the first 3 weeks because everybody loves a number one overall draft pick that's falling short of potential. Last 3 weeks, he's kind of flipped the script, if you will.
They didn't. Matt Eberflus met with the media, did not have much information. Kyler Gordon was getting an MRI, apparently, while he was talking, and they were just hopeful.
That's a big injury, potentially.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. That is a wide range. You know, didn't we see Rome Odunze get a hamstring injury and came back relatively quickly? I think he was back within 2 weeks, right? Was it a week?
Wasn't that his knee?
Was it a surprise how quickly he got back?
You mean from the beginning of the season?
Yes.
I think he hurt his. I think it was a knee. Though.
Okay,
yeah.
But that was one where you thought, oh my God, that's a.
You did have an initial fear
because like a hamstring. There's very little you can do if a guy does his knee. You can have surgery. That's about it. But, yeah, he had sprained a knee. You're right. But he came back pretty quickly.
And he's contributed.
And he's been good. But I just worry that with a high-twitch athlete like Kyler Gordon, a guy that is, you know, we talked about him at the beginning of the year. That was a guy I thought could have a breakthrough this year, but I was worried about some of the injury stuff that had been there. I hope this is not a long-term thing. But you're talking with a hamstring, you know, I mean, if it's bad, it's 6 weeks.
Yeah, I don't think
it's that bad. I hope it
isn't. Been that bad.
But I'm just saying.
You hope it's not that bad because when we talk about the nature of the position, it frankly would be more difficult for the Bears to replace Kyler Gordon than Jaquan Brisker. I would think that's a good debate, perhaps, but
I
think it's a more specialized role. Also, Kyler Gordon, the way that he plays that role,
he's
an effective blitzer.
Yes,
he's excellent against the run. He beats blocks with his quickness and agility more than his just brute strength, like a linebacker would. And without him, Josh Blackwell did have an interception, and he is a serviceable, dependable nickelback. But Kyler Gordon makes that defense and secondary special. And he gives them a lot more options and a lot more flexibility to come after quarterbacks the way they're going to have to.
And if Mr. Blackwell made a list of the best dressed Bears, I would think that Kyler Gordon would be on it.
I don't know. That fur coat was a bit much.
That was like rock star stuff.
That was a bit much.
That's a guy in London. It was.
You can't tell me you like the fur.
I thought the fur pants were more impressive than the fur coat.
I didn't know he had fur pants.
Did you
on.
See his outfit?
Goodness I saw gracious. His outfit. Yes, we. Evaluated that on Chicago Sports Network last night.
I thought he was in all fur, all the way up and down.
I noticed the jacket. I didn't get a look at the pants. If he was all in fur, it wasn't that cold.
I don't mean to infer anything. Yeah, I'm just telling you that I think he had...
It was unforgettable.
I think he had fur underwear, for God's sake.
I don't know.
I'm guessing.
I wasn't in the locker room.
He was covered
in fur. Can we ask Biggsy that when he get him on Big Time
Did
today?
Did you get to see?
Biggs is back, right?
Biggs, we'll have Biggs this morning.
All right, and we got Wani coming in.
At 7. We'll have Dave in studio. We got Mike Florio telling us the comings and goings of the world of the NFL. And, of course, Jared Payton will join us, too. We've got a remarkable show.
Curious to see what Mike Florio thinks about the NFC North. How many teams he envisions making the playoffs out of the group of four that now has four victories through six games for the first time in that division's history.
Well, in any division, right? No team has ever had four wins at this point in the season.
Mathematically impossible, I think, for all four to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
All four believe right now that they're a playoff team.
Yeah.
And so that'll be fun to see it unfold.
Scoring bundles of points, man.
Bundles.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right. We've got the pick six next. We'll get right to it. Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
It's Pick Six with Molly and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Molly Haw. Pick Six with Molly and Haw starts now.
How about Matt Eberflus finally addressing the first 15 controversy that arose in London?
I don't know if that's completely all the way accurate. I mean, we always have openers that we practice, and that's a big part of it. And so we have several plays listed as openers. So openers are plays that you're going to use on first and second down. And then obviously you go to your third down script based on the distances. And that's what pretty much everybody does.
But Eberflus did concede there was communication between the leadership of the offense and himself and Waldron that resulted in a first 15 script that players can use for their walkthroughs and to study on their own. Your reaction to all this?
I'm still kind of shocked that they didn't do that to open the season. I think that every team that I've covered over the years has done that. And I think that, you know, listening to Olin talk about it, part of what they're doing is they're giving you a list of things and they're you know, these are plays where they want to see how a team reacts. He said that he would go back when he got the plays, he would go back and he would watch tape of these teams, every team, and try to figure out how they would respond to whatever the play was. And then he would look at it again the next day, the morning of the game, and then he would go into the game and have information. Hey, they're doing this. They're not responding like we thought they would. They are doing this instead. He thought it was like a crucial bit of information for a player to study and for a player and a coach to talk over. He would talk to the offensive line coach about it, the offensive coordinator. It was like crucial information in terms of preparation. And they tried it differently because they were concerned about overloading the rookie. And it wasn't until, as DJ told us, it wasn't until they had this this conversation, they actually went to what Shane Waldron had done previously in Seattle. So, I mean, he's used to doing it too, and they tried something different. And, you know, Flusie can say that it was, you know, that maybe it's not quite accurate, but when you do say, yeah, we did meet with them and yeah, we did change it, that seems like it's pretty accurate. It seems like that they weren't doing it in entirely the same fashion and they had to alter to make everybody kind of go along with it. The very fact that you had a leadership committee that went to the head coach, to the offense coordinator, and then they said, okay, and then they put together the first 15 as they currently do. I mean, I think something was going on and they changed it and it's working. So we should be happy about it. But yeah, it's kind of a big deal.
Well, where there's smoke, there's fire. So there's definitely something there. But again, you know, as we grew up playing football, and again, I never played in the NFL, but each year you played football, like that first 15 was kind of like a line. It was kind of football jargon, lingo, right? But when you got to varsity, it wasn't like the third play that we've practiced 56 times between Monday and Friday or Thursday. If you're playing Friday night, you weren't running it. If it was third and inches, you were running a different play. So I think it's from a lost in translation, like we wondered out loud, is this part of it? You know, the best thing that's come out of this, two things. Number one, when you win, these kind of stories get put off to the side because it doesn't seem to matter as much.
Right.
But the good news is there was a discussion, and Shane Waldron is not married to, I run this offense, period, exclamation point. Like, this is what the guys like to do. This is what this group can excel at. We're now in the sixth game. We have a pretty good idea of what I brought to the table that works, and brought to the table that doesn't work, and we're going to adjust accordingly. That's the good news, because so many football coaches are, this is what I run. I don't care if you're good at it or not. We're going to run my offense. Well, what if we're not built to run your offense? We need to adapt, and they're adapting.
That's a good takeaway. It was after the third game and the second loss that they had the intervention, which I don't know if they would have had the success without it. What we're talking about, I believe, is maybe a matter of semantics, because the Bears kind of privately looked at this as, well, they've always had what they call openers for first and second down, and then third down. They structure these things as things they want to get to early on and maybe even on the opening drive. Now, did they script them 1 through 15 like a playlist? They did not. Players, you know, wanted that. They craved that. What I find hard to believe is that they spent all this time in training camp and together before the season, and this never came up in terms of what you would want to do and how you would tailor it to the team and the offense the way they would want it, the way they would need it. Because it turned out that they needed to have the first 15 scripted so they could practice it, so they could rehearse it, so they could go into it with a peace of mind on Sunday. I think what the coaches thought they were providing in flexibility, players interpreted it as ambiguity. And it was too vague. And they wanted it more specific so they felt more prepared. Whatever the case is, Shane Waldron did show a flexibility not every offensive coordinator that has been through town has shown. So they're going to look at this, because they're 4-2 at the break, as a net positive. Now, they could have maybe done it differently. Maybe they don't learn from their mistakes that way. With a rookie quarterback, I think a lot of it is trial and error. That was an error. They learned from it. And I think that's good to learn from your mistakes and move forward. But I do think that there was a difference in maybe something lost in translation, in a matter of semantics.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
Voice of Brad Biggs is here at 7 o'clock. Biggs time through six games. What position group has surprised you the most? On the flip side, which has been the most disappointing?
I think that I'm most surprised by the defensive linemen, the defensive tackles. Well, you pulled out two names yesterday that you had to kind of look at your roster and like, okay, Byron Cowart, yeah, he's the guy they activate every Saturday off the practice squad, right? Chris Martin, that's a guy that is on the defensive
I gotta go find my depth chart.
You know, it's a lot of guys.
Chris Williams?
Chris Williams, yeah, not Chris Martin. See, you kind of, you have guys who have emerged.
Chris Martin's, he's in that band, that English rock Coldplay.
Yeah, okay. See, I was thinking English. I was thinking British. So, yeah, Chris Williams had a sack. Who are these guys? Now, Javon Dexter has taken a step forward, can still get better against the run, but he's been a force against the pass. And what they have done collectively, the presence of Eric Washington has been felt. That's been a very well-coached group. Daryl Taylor has come off the edge with abandon. Brian Baldinger is using Austin Booker as an example of effort on the Baldy's breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
This is a defensive line that is well-coached and been a surprise. And maybe they have played as well as they have played because they felt like they were discounted or left out or overlooked. That always helps. As far as the, I don't want to say disappointed, but I have to be honest about my first reaction to this question. We spent so much time talking about the Bears' trio of wide receivers. And I know we're coming off a game where Keenan Allen had two touchdown catches, and last week DJ Moore had his big game. But I do think overall the wide receiver production from those three guys has not been what we thought it would be, or maybe what I expected through six games. So defensive tackles on the upside, wide receivers still with more to show.
It's a good call on both. I didn't think of the wide receivers like that, so you got me thinking. Always a good thing to get me thinking, but you got me thinking, David. Disappointing. It's I guess low-hanging fruit, but it's the offensive line. It hasn't developed into what we thought. And again, this could be play calling. Again, call the plays that the offensive line can block. There's a concept, right? But how about the running back room? Now that everybody's healthy, Swift, they're calling plays that work for DeAndre Swift, and when they need a couple of yards on the inside, they can go to Roschon Johnson. So I think the running back room is a room that's been better than advertised.
Yeah, I think the best position group on the team is their secondary. And maybe we thought it was going to be the wide receivers going into the season, but I think it's the secondary. And now we've seen injuries to the secondary, and there were three of your top five secondary members missing from that game, and they still played really well. And that's why, you got to kind of bow to John Hoke a little bit and say, great job, really well done getting guys up and running and plugged in and ready to play, and to the players as well being there. But you want everyone to be healthy and ready to go, and that includes, Smith, Terrell Smith, too. You need him back, and you'd like to see him play. He was a fifth-round pick. I just think that I don't know how you get past the offensive line, because that was sort of one of the problem areas to open up the season. They clearly weren't ready to open up the season. The whatever way you want to term it, whatever's happened with Nate Davis is a black eye for the offensive line. You know, that was a guy that you envisioned as a starter, a returning starter on that line, and he's not even active now. So that damages them quite a bit. And I think that the fact that the guy they went out and got, the guy they really thought was going to shift their fortunes, has also been injured and unable to play. Ryan Bates. So I think that kind of that combination is got to be what's the most disappointing position or group. And hopefully, Matt Pryor's done very well. When Bill Murray was forced to play, he did very well. I think there are positives that have happened there, and I don't want to be totally negative, but if you had to say one area, yeah, it's the offensive line, just who you imagine would be there when it started and who's there now.
Mully, I got a question for you and Hawk.
That's the voice of Jared Payton, 9 o'clock. Jared Payton with Mully and Hall. What did you think of the Bulls showing at Milwaukee? And what are you expecting on Wednesday when Lonzo Ball will reportedly play for the first time since January of 2022?
Yeah, I watched a lot of that game, and I found it wildly entertaining. And I understand preseason basketball and that some players are there to, go through, get a sweat, and play a little pickup, and they don't want to get fouled if they're going to the basket because they don't want anybody getting in their way. Hey, this is my show. I'm just here for the preseason. Wait, did you foul me? How dare you foul me? That seemed to be Giannis's reaction to what the Bulls were up to. But the Bulls were running the floor, and they were playing hard. And you got a lot of young players and even veteran players that are trying to make the roster. And when you sat down six of your top nine guys, you would think that would mean that you get blown out a little bit, unless the one guy who's playing is Mike Jordan. And that's not what happened. It was a pretty competitive game, given that the Bulls were not playing their top dogs. So I thought it was interesting. I thought it was fun. I knew going in that all those guys were out, and it didn't bother me at all. I really enjoyed watching some of the young guys run the floor and seeing Josh Giddey and what he can do. And it was a lot of new. And a lot of new can be good.
P. Williams, DNP. The Vooch, DNP. Kobe White, DNP. Zach LaVine, DNP. Io, DNP. Me, DNW. Did not watch. Okay. I mean, give me a break. What was I tuning in for? I mean, I am all in tomorrow.
Love of the game, buddy. Love of the game.
6:45. We got Chuck and Bill. Right?
Okay.
6:45.
Chuck
it's
going to
be on. I have the Chicago Sports Network. I have a problem with the graphic. If anybody over there cares,
they changed.
I don't like it up in the top left. They changed it?
They changed it.
Oh, they did.
They adjusted.
Oh, okay. Good. I'm glad all the complaining that we didn't do on the air worked.
Zach Zaidman did the game on Saturday night. And they welcome you back tomorrow. You're going to be watching Lonzo Ball.
I will watch. I'm all in.
He will be making medical history. And that is worth celebrating. He will be celebrating a personal triumph, and that is easy to respect. and to pull for. He is the easiest guy in that locker room to give applause to right now because of all that he's endured. So, yeah, that'll be fascinating theater, and I feel good for him. I don't know how he fits into this team, and that's okay. That can be worked out later if it's worked out at all. As for last night, yeah, there were reasons to watch. Matez Bezelis is a thing. Up and down, he's relentless. His attitude and swagger and confidence is something to watch and notice and not ignore, Dustin, not ignore. This is somebody who is a high draft pick who they expect big things from. Maybe not early, but certainly he's going to factor into the plans long term because they believe he's as good as anybody in that draft. And last night he was fearless in attacking Giannis and dunking on him and making Stacey King exclaim, "Meet me at the rim and don't be late." That was fun. I don't know if I liked 17 of 54 from three-point range. I like the Bulls having a tendency and a desire to shoot more threes. I just would like to see them make more threes.
Different question on a different topic.
Voice of Mike Florio, what's your take on the MLB playoffs after the Mets and Dodgers game, followed by the Yankees and Guardians matchup? Are you cheering for any one team or more against somebody? And are you getting your mind around all the different possibilities of a World Series matchup?
Soto and Stanton, home ring, that's what people come to see. Judge will break out of his slump at some point, right? Maybe for the World Series. I hope it's for the World Series because I would love Yankees-Dodgers. That would be romantic baseball theater. It would be reminiscent of a different era and age. And I think everybody of a certain age would appreciate what that tradition represents. Yankees and Dodgers. I don't know if Ohtani would pitch in the World Series. I don't know if the Dodgers are going to make the World Series. The Mets aren't messing around. Frankie Lindor wants to be heard. He's an easy guy to root for as well. That team feels like they're a team of destiny. They know they don't care if they have the second biggest payroll. They feel like the Miracle Mets, and it's 1969, and they're defying the odds and fighting back against all this. I still think it's going to be Dodgers and Yankees. Sean Manaea was terrific. You look at the Dodgers, they'll probably bounce back in New York, but the Yankees won and the Mets stole one in L.A. Yankees-Dodgers, that's what I want.
I was really impressed with the Mets' response yesterday. They got just destroyed in the opener, don't get a run, and then the Dodgers are on this 33-inning scoreless streak by their pitchers, and Francisco Lindor, boom, and that's it. What's the better story? Is it Dodgers-Yankees or is it Mets-Yankees? I mean, it might be a little too much New York.
Yes.
But, like,
who wants Mets-Yankees?
But pretty good. Like, it's a pretty good story, right? Like, the Mets at one point were 10 games under 500. I'm saying if it's Yankees-Dodgers, it goes back to, well, the two teams that spent about the most money made it to the postseason. All right, Tom Ricketts, are you paying attention? Right? Like, that'll be the theme around here. Buy it, Tom. Okay, in order to get back, you got to buy it. And don't. We're not the Guardians. We're not in Cleveland. You know, ask Joe Kim Noah. Okay, Cleveland's no Gouda. So
you like it? You think Cleveland's cool?
Thank you, Joe Kim. Thank you, Brandon. But I want the Yankees in there, and I don't care who they play. To be honest, the Yankees against either one will be fun baseball.
Yeah, I'm wrapping my mind around the idea of a subway series in New York. I'm trying to see how I feel about that because I rejected that idea initially. But I think I really like this Mets story, and I think I, you know, love watching Francisco Lindor as a player. That was amazing yesterday to watch. So they get a double. So he comes up, and they decide, well, you know, we're not going to let him. Or maybe they had a man on third. He comes up, they're like, man, we're not going to let him beat us. So just walk him. Don't even, you know, they signal walk him. And then they walk a guy, and then is it Vicieto hits a grand slam? It's like, it was unbelievable. Now it's 6-0, and that pretty much ended the game. The Yankees win in the late game, and you're kind of, it's just kind of wrapping your mind around the idea. that now that the Mets have stolen a game in L.A., where are you at with starting pitching? I know L.A. had gone how many innings without allowing a run, 30-something innings, but boy, that ended, and you got to admire the way they tied that series. Now you go back to New York. I'm just trying to wrap my mind around the idea of maybe a Subway Series being a fun thing, because I don't think there's any way that the Yankees aren't going to get through. They just, even with Judge in a slump, Giancarlo Stanton, he's very good in the playoffs. His playoff numbers
are Mr. Clutch.
Shockingly
he's Mr.
good.
October.
He's Mr. Power in the playoffs. And here's one for you. This really caused me some pause when I saw the list of names of the guys. Among players with at least 100 playoff plate appearances, Stanton sits behind only Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, and Randy Arozarena in slugging percentage.
Course. The three greatest sluggers of all time.
Wild one. But yeah, I'm trying to wrap my mind around the idea that I could like a Subway Series, a Crosstown Classic, whatever way you want to term it. And I don't think I will. I don't think that does much for me. But
oh boy, good question.
All right, we've got the extra point next.
No, we don't. We got two more questions.
I'm sorry. I mistook your signal there.
What's your reaction to Brett Bielema being honest about his personal feelings against Purdue when explaining why Saturday's win meant so much personally to him?
They really wanted to win this game for maybe they knew I was really into it, right? I'm into every game, but this one just has pissed me off on many different levels, to be quite honest. So, I just know how we run our business, right? And I'll stand on that, right? So, like, I love the way our guys fight, the way they practice, the way they prepare. I love the way we coach. I love the way they recruit. I love the way they develop. And to get this win was a big deal.
One more after this.
Just everything, right? Like, I just, anybody that knows what I'm about, right? Like, just handle your business. Do things right, and a lot of good things can happen, right?
That is the head coach of the football team at U of I, Brett Bielema. Your reaction to what you just heard there?
Well, he doesn't like Ryan Walters very much. That's fairly obvious, I think, right? He doesn't like the Purdue head coach, who was his defensive coordinator, who went to Purdue and then took apparently too many of the assistants with him. And Purdue's had a terrible run this year, and they've already lost some of next year's recruits as a result of it. And I don't know if Ryan Walters is going to be looking for another job, frankly, at the end of the season. I'm not sure how long they're going to stay with that. It's been really, really poor. And it would appear that he will be taking those coaches somewhere else, because I don't know that he's going to be sticking around Purdue. But, man, they gave him a game. You know, he had a lot of information about Illinois, and is that accurate? Did he become the offensive play caller in the second half of that game? Pretty incredible to hear that story. But, they won the game, Illinois, and the coach was pleased that happened, because he said the players understood that it meant a lot to him. And he never named Ryan Walters, but we've known there's bad blood over the number of coaches he took with him.
I really enjoyed it. I love a coach that's that honest, and I hope that the home state football team gets the best of Michigan this Saturday down at Champaign.
Big week for Illinois and Brett Bielema, no doubt about it. Michigan is a great challenge. Big week for Northwestern with Wisconsin locally. And that's going to be another great big week in the Big Ten. Brett Bielema can't hide his emotions, and I don't think he should try. Definitely there's some bad blood between the way Ryan Walters left Champaign and went to Purdue and took some people along the way. There is a way to leave a job, and apparently Ryan Walters did it, left in a way that bothered Brett Bielema to this day. Purdue is a mess. They fired their offensive coordinator earlier in the year. You did not expect them to come back after being down 27-3 at the half and end up losing 50-49 in overtime. Think about that, 46 points in the second half, and you lose. That's a tough day at the office. Brett Bielema, keep being Brett Bielema. This is the way you build your program. Like it or not, he doesn't apologize for who he is and what he stands for. I respect that. And he's put Illinois in a position now where they are 16th in the country. They are back in the top 25 and back relevant again in the Big Ten. Good for him.
Kind of similar to the question that the guy asked me over there.
If you're a diehard fan of a team here in town, choose any team you'd wish. Would you be okay if your coach, your manager, your skipper was yelling at Boo Birds a la Nick Sirianni, or would you be embarrassed or mad at him? Would it depend on how successful that particular coach was?
It's a great question. I think it's hilarious. By the way, I stand corrected. Illinois is 22nd, not 16th. Indiana is 16th. Nick Sirianni is a clown. I think that we can establish that. He is a well-established clown in Philadelphia. I don't like the way that he went after fans. I don't like the way that he comports himself on the sidelines. And I don't like a lot about Nick Sirianni. And I don't know why it is something about him that stands out, but he kind of bugs me. I don't think that he's long for Philadelphia. I like the way that he teared up during the national anthem at the Super Bowl. That's what I remember him. That was his defining moment. But I think he's a clown. And I don't think that about a lot of NFL coaches, but something about him rubs me the wrong way. Somebody asked me yesterday what I would think about Nick Sirianni or a coach if he were a Super Bowl winning coach or a World Series winning coach, if that were Ditka or Ozzie in Chicago. Would you support a guy going after fans? I don't think that I would. I think I might understand it a little better. I might think understand that they would have a little bit more rope to play with, but I don't think that I would ever support a coach going after a paid customer, even though in a game that they were winning just because he was kind of trying to have the last word. It's a bad look for the franchise. It's a terrible look for the coach. So no, I would hope it wouldn't depend on how successful the coach is.
Well, it does depend on how successful the coach is. That's where you get your leash, no doubt about that. It doesn't mean it's right or wrong, but that's how you get a leash when you win. The other part is, what did they say to Nick Sirianni? You know, did they say something about his children? Did they say something about his wife? Did they say, you know, how far did the insult go? Does that then merit going after the fan because of what you said? I mean, Mike Ditka famously, right? 86, you know, get your mouth shut, jerk. Here's your IQ buddy zero, right? That whole thing. Again, what had Ditka done? Ditka won a Super Bowl, right? So he had that leash, but that was kind of the beginning of the end, if you will. That was kind of started to spiral a little bit. That's the one that I most famously remember. I mean, you know, we've had the Cubs manager go after the fans, right? The Lee Elia rant is about a skipper manager going after the bleacher bums. Right. So there's been plenty of these things here in town. It wasn't just like the manager didn't go out to the stands and start pointing and gyrating. So I do think winning buys you some time, though.
Yeah, I mean, someone used the word clown. That is pretty much the word that would apply to that sort of behavior. Dustin, pretend you don't hear it, whatever he's saying to you. You are the head coach of the team. You're not Mike Ditka. Your team is unraveling. You apparently are unraveling. You go to the bye week and you shave your head. I mean, I'd worry. Is the guy okay? Because that's not normal behavior, and that's not professional behavior to, you know, get puffy chested after a 20-16 victory over maybe the worst team in football. How bad is Cleveland? They got a quarterback who's quitting on them in games, and they're going nowhere, and all of a sudden they're all in trouble. And Nick Sirianni is the takeaway because he can't handle his business. I mean, you know, I got my bald head and I'm gone off the deep end. And now I'm going to scream at fans because they boo me. What the hell is wrong with him? He showed up with his kid after he did that. He showed up because he wanted to keep the reporters from apparently asking him hard questions. Listen, this guy is unraveling. He is not handling this well. He's handling it very badly, and I think that if you ever listen to him, I mean, his first news conference was a disaster, and he does that fairly regularly. He does this whole word salad thing, and he's unraveling. This is a guy that can't take what's going on the field or off the field, and it's a really bad look, and it is really amateur hour. And I hope that somebody spoke to him about it, because he seemed like he was ready to apologize for the way he had behaved. But, man, it's got to be better than that. It's got to be better. All right. Now we do have the extra point, and we'll get to that next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
The first part of being smart is knowing what to do. We're gonna have systems in place.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
How crazy is it that the NFC North is not only the best division in the NFL, with each team having at least four wins, but it's also the most dominant? Every team in the NFC North went into Monday with a better point differential than every other team in the National Football League, with Minnesota plus minus 61, Detroit plus minus 60, the Bears plus 47, Green Bay plus 41. Look at that. Unbelievable, your take on the NFC North being the best division in football at this moment.
It's never been like that before. This is the best division through six games since realignment in 2002, the first time that all four teams have had at least four victories at this stage of the season. All of the teams are clicking. All of the windows are open. All of the opportunities are being taken advantage of. If you're the Bears, that's the bad news. You wanted somebody to come out slow. You want somebody to come back to earth. Might be the Vikings. Vikings-Lions this week is probably one of the best games in the NFL. And then the Vikings have to go to LA for a short week against the Rams on Thursday night. They are more likely, I think, than the Packers or the Lions to come back to earth. Sam Darnold can't do this forever, right? Brian Flores is pushing all the right buttons, but that defense has some holes, right? I don't know if I'm right, but you have to wonder and hope, if you're a Bears fan, that's going to be the case. I don't see the Lions coming back even after the terrible loss of Aiden Hutchinson. Jared Goff is playing at an insane level. Followed up his perfect game with 153.8 passer rating. That guy's good. Ben Johnson is amazing. They ran a hook and lateral to Penei Sewell, to a right tackle. They lateraled to him. That's creative. The Packers are the Packers. The Bears take care of business. All this stuff is very interesting. The division is the toughest in football. It's not even close, but the Bears only have to worry about the next opponent. They can't get caught up in all of this. What happens if then and then? No. Win the next Sunday and then do that again. Don't worry about the outside noise.
Great point. Don't worry about the outside noise. And the Packers are hosting the Texans, so we'll see how good. You know, Texans are obviously a good football team. And then, as you mentioned, David, Lions at the Vikings. Both those games are in that noon window on Sunday with no Bears. You got plenty of opportunity maybe to catch a little bit of both of those games. And the worst part is that the Packers lost their quarterback for at least two games. He missed two starts, and they didn't really miss a beat. They're on pace with everybody else in the division. So you'd hope that they would have struggled a little bit more. Listen, you guys pointed this out yesterday, or a caller did, right? And we agreed. The Bears are at least not a bad team. They're beating the bad teams. So we don't know if they're just an okay team or if they're a good team quite yet. That's going to start playing out in the near future.
You know, Sam Darnold hurt his knee. I don't know how serious the knee injury is, but if he has a serious injury, that is a disaster for them. I mean, are they going to be able to do this with Nick Mullen? That he's their backup now that J.J. McCarthy's already lost for the year. So if anything happened to Sam Darnold, that's a big deal. Aiden Hutchinson went down. The best defensive player, a guy who was a favorite for the defensive player of the year, is out for the rest of the season with a broken tibia, his left tibia, that happened late in the game against Dallas. So you wonder about Detroit. We saw the Packers get through without Jordan Love, and Jordan Love appears to have been returned and back where he's at. I don't think four teams are coming out of this division. I think the Bears would need something to happen to one of their opponents where they fell apart, as much as the Bears continue to play well once they get to the division portion of the schedule. So I understand that you're looking at this thing and you're seeing four teams with a minimum of four wins, but it's the NFL. It is really early in the season. There are 1,000 things that could go wrong, and there are all sorts of things you have to navigate, and you just got to hope that anybody can stay healthy. You hope the Bears stay healthy. You hope that they are preserved and there's nothing seriously wrong with anyone right now, and that they are coming back and they're going to be getting better as the season goes on. And then you look and you see, because you never know what a team's going to look like when you actually face them. This snapshot of this portion of the season, they look like they're in the best division in football. And there's no reason to believe that bad things will happen and that won't continue. But it's a weird league, and weird things happen. And we've already seen a couple of teams that are going to be scrambling to try to get healthy. You know, the Rams never thought they'd have this year. I don't think San Francisco imagined they'd have this year. I think, you know, it's amazing what the Chiefs have gone through and how it hasn't impacted them, because the one player that they can't lose is the one player that is still healthy. So that makes them hugely dangerous. But, you know, that is the problem with a 17-game slate. That's the problem if you go to 18 games. You're just going to look different at different points in the season. And you may look completely different at the end of the year than you do at the beginning. It's the NFL.
It's the NFL.
Not for long. Mm-hmm. Mully and Haw, 312-644-6767 is the number. It's Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
I don't know if that's completely all the way accurate. I mean, we always have openers that we practice, you know, and that's a big part of it. And so we have several plays listed as openers. So openers are plays that you're going to use on first and second down. And then obviously you go to your third down script based on the distances. And that's what pretty much everybody does.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That is the voice of Matt Eberflus, and he is responding to a question, I believe, from Mark Rowdy about the first 15 and the report that we heard from Stacy Dales on Friday and then was on during the game on Sunday morning about the changes, one of the changes that the Bears have made in their offense. Is that they are now doing a first 15, and they had, as you heard from Flusi, and as you reported yesterday, David, they had gone with the openers and with a different way of putting together the plays, and players prefer it the way that it is traditionally done. And so he has acknowledge that, and he has gone with that, and he's put them together in that fashion.
Shane Waldron adjusted and evolved and adapted. Good coaches do. The players called him on it after the Colts loss, and it was a little more vague than they would have liked, and I don't know if we would have known as much about the process as we do now. We don't typically, I think, hear as much in terms of detail. This was courtesy of Mercedes Lewis.
That's right.
Via Stacy Dales. And Mercedes Lewis has done a lot of talking through six games. He has been a conduit to the fans, if you will, certainly the media, and provided a lot of information that we're not necessarily always privy to. So there has been a lot of focus on the process. The good news for the Bears is that the focus on the outcome has been better. They have been prolific the last 2 weeks by their standards. The last time they scored back-to-back 30-point games and victories was 2013. You remember that offense had Cutler and Forte,
yep,
and Marshall and Jeffrey and Martellus Bennett. The last time they won back-to-back games of 19 or more points, Mully, was 2006. They went to the Super Bowl that year.
That's right.
So that's why the outcome of the last 2 weeks, regardless of the opponent, I don't know that you can dismiss that, but it is the NFL. You have to give the Bears credit offensively for making the changes, making the adjustments, and then succeeding in a way that we expected them to back in the preseason.
Yeah, I think it's important to keep it in a little bit of perspective. In other words, I think it's it's important that they won. And you remember that they had this meeting, and it felt like the season was bottoming out after they lost to the Colts. And they had this meeting, and then you got word of some of that, and you're thinking, oh, man, this is not good. And the only way around it is to win. And they've won three straight games.
Yep.
And that's as long as that goes on, none of the coaches are going to get upset about whatever's being leaked, and whatever else is happening is pretty good.
Start better, no three and outs, go to no huddle, and then keep whatever's working.
Yeah, the first 15 didn't work for the first two series.
We focus on the first 15, but they haven't been very successful two series, the last two games.
We got to get to a break. We'll be right back at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.